following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Episode 30 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. My name is Jason Bryant. Today, joined by world champions Dennis Hall and Terry Brands, and it's the summertime. Got a lot of topics to discuss. We're approaching Rio, but before we even get to that, this is episode 30. This show started about a year and a half ago. John McGovern, one of the founders of the World Wrestling Resource, came up to me at the NWCA convention after I had talked about podcasting and said, I got an idea with the group that himself, Dennis, and Terry all run, the World Wrestling Resource, and said he wanted to start a show. Dennis, first of all, you guys had some calls. It was like a conference call type of stuff. And then now we're into this full podcast that's on iTunes. I want to get your take on things because you're not the most prevalent guy when it comes to the media in terms of giving interviews. But, you know, what have you thought about our first 30 episodes here and what it's brought to the wrestling community?
You know, I think it's a good thing for the sport. We talk about topics. We talk openly and honestly. And, you know, people get to hear what our views are. I think a lot of times our views are liked by some and not liked by many. And it's a good thing to get discussion going about different topics.
Terry, your thoughts here, first 30 episodes in.
I'm going to say I like it a lot. I like what you bring. You know, you have a organized agenda there that John gives to you, and you do a great job there, and your voice and your reputation definitely adds to, you know, people wanting to be on. So I think the traffic has increased significantly. From my perspective, I love it. You know, it's like Dennis said, you know, whatever the opinions are, we're going to throw them out there and then, you know, just give people to think about it and keep the wrestling sport on their minds and that kind of thing. And the probably my favorite one that we've done so far was, the Lee Kemp one, when he was, you know, talking about being fit as a coach and talking about nutrition and those kinds of things. So I think it's been really good. We've had some really, really dynamic personalities on and people that have offered maybe even opposing opinions to, you know, any one of us. And I think that we've welcomed that with open arms.
And Terry, first thing we want to talk about a little bit is we had the World Cup coming up, but we also had a coaching hire with a former Hawkeye, Bill Zadick, named the new U.S. Olympic men's freestyle coach. And your thoughts on Bill Zadick getting the job? He's been with the developmental program. He's been assistant coach there in Colorado Springs for a number of years. And what do you think he's going to bring to the table?
Well, I think we like it. I think that the number one question that I have with that situation is, are they going to give him the autonomy to run his program? And, you know, that was probably my major question going in was, who's really going to be the coach? Is it going to be the administration or is it going to be the coach? And, you know, if they allow him to implement what he feels like he needs to do to bring that unity and that cohesiveness to U.S., to the entire country of all wrestlers internationally in the USA, then I think it's going to be a great thing.
Technically and tactically, I mean, Bill Zadick brings a lot to the table with his knowledge. He's a world champion. Do you think he's got what it takes in a teaching situation? You've seen what he's done with the developmental guys, but then take that step to be, you know, he's the guy here. What does some things about Bill Zadick that he has that people might not know about from a technical aspect?
Well, I don't think it really matters what we think right now. They made the hire, and, you know, what we need to do right now is we need to figure out, you know, are we gonna accept that? And as a program, we got to go move forward and accept that. And Bill Zadig is a very, very personable guy. He's a very likable person. He brings that piece of settlement, I guess, to the entire wrestling community. In my opinion, he's friends with everybody. You know, he knows how to, play the game internationally. You know, and I remember over in the Junior Worlds a couple of years ago, over in Bulgaria, and you know, I was ready to come unglued. This guy was sitting in the back room and wouldn't let our guys in to check their weight, and I'm breaking the door down and you know, basically putting my arms up to get our guys in the back way to get in to check their weight. And he's holding a conversation with the guy and, you know, befriending him, and just a different approach. And it's something that can help us. And his name is recognizable. He does have a world championship to his credit. And I think it's something that, you know, the combination of those skills are going to be very healthy for the freestyle program.
Moving on to the World Cup, the United States finishes fourth, loses two duels in terms of the classification points, which was the old way duel meets were scored. Both matches went 4-4. Coming down to the last match in both situations, and Terry, just your overall assessment of how Team USA did, and what do you think that what good came out of this individually, and what needs to be worked on heading into Rio?
You know, again, it's one of those things where there's a lot of things that need to be worked on for Rio, and there, you know, you're really not feeling really good about it right now based on the team aspect and the result that we turned in. But, you know, what if we would have won both duels on the classification, you know, then you're feeling good about it. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where it was so close. We're without Burrows. We're without a heavyweight. So, you know, how do you really want to approach this? I mean, this is a 3-day conversation, really, because there's so much that goes into this stuff, and the margins are so small between, winning and not winning. And so, you know, I thought there were some situations there where Team USA did a decent job of persevering. I thought there were some situations where, you know, maybe there was some gross neglect that could have been the difference in both duels. So, you know, and part of that's at home here with Daniel Dennis. So, you know, we own a lot of that. And, you know, we're the first program to say that, and maybe the only one, but we're saying it. And we got to do a better job there. Frank Molinaro, every time he steps on the mat, he's getting better. Every time he steps on the mat, he's getting better. You saw it when he was going through the qualifiers, those two qualifiers. And he didn't qualify the weight, and he's had an opportunity, but he hasn't been rattled. He's continued to let that happen, that growth happen. And that's a good thing. Now, what are we going to do about that when we got to make scratch weight? What are we going to do about that when, you know, we're in the Olympic Games and we're up against, you know, the returning, you know, world champion, or, you know, those kind of things? He's already seen the caliber, and he knows how to win those matches, so he's got to really put the icing on the cake when he goes to Rio. You know, that's just an example. And, you know, we could go on and on and on and on in there and take each guy and break it down. So that was one thing that was a really, really bright spot from my perspective. You know, the things that maybe weren't so bright was controlling the center of the mat against Iran. I mean, this is America. These are things that Dennis and I grew up on, priding ourselves in our wrestling, was that we do control. When did Iran start controlling the center of the mat, crying out loud? You know, that gets my blood pressure up when you hear these flow guys talking about how good Iran is about holding the center of the mat. And I'm thinking, those freaking guys couldn't hold the center of the mat. I know they didn't hold the center of the mat against Dennis Hall, and I know they didn't hold the center of the mat against me and a number of other guys. And so where did this come from? Are we going to really buy into this propaganda that that's what they're good at? And Russia's just better tactically and technically than we are, but we're going to come out in the end and hopefully beat them. You know, those aren't the things that should be coming out of our camp. What should be coming out of our camp is that we have six individuals that are getting ready for Rio that bring a really, really high level of tactics and techniques of our own that we can apply to our individual styles of wrestling and win gold medals in Rio. It's that simple to me. But the hard part, the tough part, is those talking points to the camps or to the individuals from the USA coaching staff, getting the information to the local coaches, not necessarily trying to be the end-all and the fix-all and we have all the answers and any other way you can't win. That stuff does not fly in this kind of a culture, this kind of a system that we have anymore. You have to get the information to the coaches. You know, where's the video? You know, how long am I going to have to wait for the video? Because I still haven't seen Krasnoyarsk. You know, I've been asking for that since January. So, you know, I'm getting a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit antagonistic here, but those are the realities of the situation. How do I have to really get to YouTube and dig through that to find video? Maybe I'm traveling. Maybe I'm out of service. Maybe I want it on a DVD. You know, those are the things that, as a coach, in whether I'm in Molinaro's camp or Snyder's camp or Turvell's camp or at Nebraska with Jordan Burroughs, those are the things that I want to know. Okay, you have the answers. Well, get me the resources where I can answer a lot of my own questions, and you give me the feedback, you know, that kind of stuff. So, again, like I said up front, I'm talking a lot, but it really is a three-day conversation on where we're headed, and then set the plan, and then now it's a moving program moving forward all the way up until they close the ceremony on the 21st of August.
Dennis, I realize a lot of this is circling around the Freestyle World Cup, but did you have a chance to watch it and take in any of it, and anything to add on Terry's comments?
No, I did get to watch a little bit of it. There's some good wrestling, pretty exciting stuff. It was good to see the U.S. team do decent. You know, it comes down to, you know, making the changes from here on out. You got 50 days left until, I believe, 50-some days left until wrestling. So you got to take every day, and you got to get better every single day. And I think the sense of urgency needs to kick in for a lot of the athletes. I know when I was competing, it was every day. I had to get better or I was getting worse and guys were going to beat me. So I think, you know, providing guys with the opportunities and anything the athletes need right now is critical. You know, and I think the athletes got to have an open mind when they're talking with their coaches and really take a deep look at themselves to see what they need to fix so they can go win a medal.
Now, Dennis, the Greco guys, the majority of them are over in Baku, Azerbaijan, on a three-week training cycle, and the freestyle guys just finished up with the World Cup. They've got training cycles. From a Greco-Roman standpoint, you've got an athlete that you're personally training, Ben Provisor, 50, you said 50-some days out. With the personal training and then the national team training, what are the next steps to peak here for your athletes in Greco-Roman?
You know, for me, I'm not going to be politically correct. I don't think a three-week trip to Azerbaijan is the best interest of athletes. You know, is it good? Yeah. You know, you get some good competition and stuff, but I think 3 weeks is a long time mentally for these guys being out of the country, not in their comfort zone. You know, I know Proviso wasn't too happy about it, but he's going to do it. And it's just tough when you're out of your own country. And, you know, I mean, the USA could have spent a lot less money by bringing four or five guys in from overseas and training with their guys in their home area in Colorado Springs or wherever they want to train. And the guys would be more, they'd be refreshed and ready to go when they do hit their individual camps in Colorado Springs. So, but you know what? It is what it is. They got to make the best of the situation and get the most out of it. And that's up to the athletes right now. So hopefully the training system that they got over there right now is right. I know with Provisor, he comes back, I think, on the 6th of July. coming back to Stephen's point. I want to get my hands on him. I want to see how he looks. I don't. There's a few things that I need to see and if he's been working on. And you know, for me, I think for him, it's going to be, you know, was he working on and making those changes in practices? You know, when you get to the Olympic Games, you better be attacking, because if you ain't attacking, guys are going to be attacking you, and then we'll see how good your defense is on bottom, you know? So, you know, I'm looking forward to the time that I'm going to get with them coming up. You know, hopefully I get at least 10 days with them.
Now, I guess the counter to that would be is the way I'm thinking it, knowing with how the United States has sent athletes over prior to World Championships and Olympic Games for acclimation. Do you think maybe the part of the 3 weeks is maybe to get the athletes prepared for, okay, yo, we're going to be on the road, you know, 2-3 weeks before we compete in hostile territory preparing for the Olympics? Is that maybe another opinion on why it's a 3-week camp?
I have no idea.
just throwing it out
there.
All
I can tell you is ask Terry if he would have wanted to have been over there for 3 weeks at this point in his training. I know I wouldn't have.
All right, Terry, I'll ask you that question.
I'm with him there, and I'm with Dennis there. I don't know a lot of the reasons why we do that. Here's the thing that I'm going to say to you. The Cowboy has been bronze the last 2 years, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. What is it about him that is producing that result? Okay. So, and then what is there in front of him or out there, a resource that is going to get him to get to that Olympic final match and win that gold medal? Okay. So if I'm a coach, I don't know what the answer is right now. I'm not around him enough, but if I'm a coach, I don't know that going overseas for 3 weeks is the answer or not. There's a lot to be said. I mean, the gymnastics programs, one of the things that I learned out in Colorado, the gymnastics program for the World Championship years, they fly in a couple of days before the competition. That's it. And they're there for, they go in, they get the job done, and they leave. Sometimes, you know, where is the Greco team right now? I mean, where are they? Does anybody know the location of where they're at?
Yeah, they're in Baku.
Okay. Where are the Olympic Games at? Does anybody know the location of where the Olympic Games are at?
Other than the questions about them being still competed, but they are scheduled for Rio.
Okay. So is Rio in the proximity of Baku? You know, these are things that, from me dynamically thinking, you know, where does it make sense? You know, what about Cuba? You know, what about bringing the Cubans up? I mean, I don't know the logistics of it all. And again, like I said earlier, this is something that I'm only speculating on, and I'm not really giving you a hard answer. I'm just throwing out things to think about, you know, those are the things. If I was a coach, you know, and I was brainstorming a schedule or a program for my Olympic team in June, I'm throwing those things out there, and I'm thinking about the proximity of Rio. I'm thinking about the time zone of Rio. Just like I would, Baku makes sense if the World Championships were in Mahachkala, or if the Olympic Games were in Sochi this year, the Summer Games were in Sochi this year. That makes sense to me. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's tough because I'm not the coach, and it's easy to sit here and be very, very critical. But at the same time, common sense should prevail.
One thing I want to shift gears on a little bit in terms of that training is, Terry, you mentioned we didn't have Jordan Burroughs at the World Cup. Just his wife, Lauren, just had their second child, beautiful baby girl. And that kind of goes into the mindset, the everything that comes with being an elite level athlete. Both of you guys have kids. You guys have competed through that. And it seems like Jordan Burroughs has had something come up every year. It was a broken ankle. It was his first child. It's the second child. I mean, it seems like there's always been something with Burroughs, and it hasn't really rattled him. But when you add the marriage aspect, you add the fatherhood aspect to being a competitor in a championship situation. I'll start with Dennis here. How much does this change things for you? How much do you have to adapt your training And basically, you don't necessarily have to compromise, but what do you have to do when you have athletes that have children so close to a major championship?
It's tough. There's no doubt about it. You know, your number one priority in your life should be, you know, your wife and then your kids. So your schedule kind of is dictated by your wife and the kids. And I remember bringing my kids into the restroom or bringing them to the gym to get my lift in. And, you know, it is tough, but you know what? When you're focused, you don't see it that way. You see it as doing your job of raising your family and then doing your second job, which is wrestling and trying to win medals. And, you know, it's a tough thing for him, I'm sure, right now. But he knows he's got a lot of people willing to help him, and he's got to rely on the help, you know, babysitter here and there, so he can get his workouts in. So.
And Terry, going to bounce the same one to you, because there's a number of the freestylers with children. Tervell, I believe Molinaro has a young child, and you know, Burroughs with two, Tervell's got two. And your experience is through going through competing with the whole fatherhood thing.
I'm unique there. I see it different. You know, I mean, how, what do you want me to do here, Brian? I'm really been negative today. You want me to keep going?
Well, just, you know, there's different mindsets.
The thing. I don't see it as negative. I see it as maybe another perspective. But see, where I'm at with this is I don't see my life divided up in a pie. I see that when I'm going to work out, that is 100% what my focus is. And when I'm at home with my wife and my family, I'm 100% focused on that. If I step away and take a recruiting call and I'm in that situation and I actually answer the phone, then I have to change my focus, and it has to be into that recruiting call 100%. I don't see it where, you know, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to line this babysitter up. I mean, that's what my wife was for. You know, that those are things that, you know, for me as a wrestler, you know, I had a very, very unique system because I had a wife that was so supportive, and money did not drive our family. You know, it was about goals, and it was about aspirations and wanting to, you know, accomplish certain things, whether it was, you know, professionally or in sport or whatever the situation, or from a family aspiration, whatever the situation was, it was never driven by money. So if she had to give up a job for a year because I was training for the Olympics, it didn't bother. I mean, we lived in a freaking trailer house, for crying out loud. You know, it never bothered either one of us. So that's where I'm at with that. I think that, you know, we've all done it. Yeah, we all do it different. And what works for your family dynamic is what's going to work for you. It has to work in your head. So again, once again, it really doesn't matter what I did or what I think. I think that, you know, you could write a book about, you know, how to do this maybe a better way, you know, or a different way. And everybody could write that book that's been through it.
Now, while not an athlete, but still involved in this sport and putting a lot of hours and time in, I found when I got married and I had my first daughter, my second one's on the way here in a matter of weeks, is that children became a very grounding presence. It was like, okay, I don't have to think about wrestling all the time. I don't have to think about the job all the time. I don't have to think about hitting a deadline or, in y'all's cases, training or getting the weight down. And Dennis, did you find that having kids kind of gave you a little bit, and not necessarily an escape, that's not really the word I'm looking for, but a diversion to where you could concentrate on things that were also super important, and you didn't have to have the wrestling portion of it, the training, the getting the weight down, the technique in the back of your mind all the time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you come home or you hold your kid for the first time ever, it changes you as a person. And for me, it changed. I mean, it made me realize wrestling wasn't the most important thing, even though I wanted to be the best in the world and I worked to be the best in the world. You realize that there's a little bit more to life once you have a kid. And for me, I still train the same way I've always trained, but yet it was nice to come home and, you know, maybe you had a bad practice and you got killed and your kid runs up to you and gives you a hug. I mean, that's the best thing in the world. Just takes a little bit of the stress off of you. And allows you to be normal, I guess, because when you're training full time trying to win, you know, you only got one thing on your mind, and the diversion, I guess, if you want to call it that, really, it helped me be able to compete for a longer period.
As with the games, again, Dennis mentioned 50 days out. Oh, we're getting to the nitty gritty. We just had the World Cup in freestyle. Greco World Cup was a couple weeks prior. But for you, both of you's personal experiences, you's, listen to my Southern accent coming out, or y'all, with your individual performances and training leading up to it, I'll start with Terry here. When you've got Dan Dennis going through this process for the first time, what similarities do you see in your own training that you're trying to instill with Daniel Dennis? And what are some things that, you know, he's kind of a strange bird in a lot of ways, and he kind of off the beaten path. And what experiences are you trying to bring to his training that you experienced that he can get benefits of? And what are you letting him do on his own to go through this cycle for the first time?
I think you lend an ear more than anything else. And he knows what he needs. And he, you know, he's at an age, he's at 29 years of age or 30 years of age now. And he knows what he needs. He knows what his body needs. Sometimes there are reminders in there, but for the most part, he is calling those shots based on the conversations that we have. And that's something that I think is really, really important from where I was at back in that 2000 cycle where I was trying to, you know, figure out, you know, how I was going to win that gold medal in 2000. You know, it was different. We didn't really have that situation here. Gable had retired, and, you know, things were, they were just different. And so what we try to do here as a staff and with the Hawkeye Wrestling Club is we provide a ear for those guys. You know, what do they think? What do they want to accomplish? What's your week look like? What's your month look like? What's your, you know, your 3 month period outlook like, and then listen to them and then provide that. And then when they say, what do you think? Then we tell them what they think, what we think. And you go on and you tweak it, you know, day by day, workout by workout, and, you know, just keep him rolling, keep him happy, keep him healthy. Pull the reins when we think we need to pull the reins, and, you know, let him run when we think we need to let him run. And it's always with an open conversation.
Dennis, with Provisor in his second time through, what have you noticed that may be a difference between going through the games and the whole, you know, there's the village, there's everything that goes with the Olympics. It's a lot more labor intensive than a world championships and the ancillary events that go on. But what have you noticed from Ben this time going through the Olympic process compared to his first time through?
You know, I think the first time you really didn't know what it was all about. And I think now he's a little bit more relaxed and knows he's more focused on what he needs to change. I just wish I was there and around him, you know, to make sure he's making those changes. I believe he is. But, you know, I think one of the things that he's always, I mean, at the trials, he was in pretty good shape. But as Terry knows and I know, everybody, when they get to Olympics, is probably in the best shape of their life. And I just want to make sure he ain't missing out on his conditioning, because in the past, that's been a little bit of a problem for him. I want him to be in the best shape of his life and feeling like he can take on anybody in the world. So, but for him, I think he's doing the right things. It's, you know, number one, just keeping his mind clear and being a little bit more relaxed and enjoying life. You know, I think for Ben, he's just got to stay sharp mentally right now, because he's wrestling really well.
About a month ago, we had the Beat the Streets Gala in Times Square again. This has become an event, Wrestling Outside, getting a lot of eyes on wrestling in one of the biggest media markets in the world. This year, they added something a little bit dynamic, a little bit unique. And we were talking about having kids. Well, some of the people that were actually competing in this event are still kids. They're high school, they're junior age. And with the freestyle side of it, Terry, I want to get your opinion on getting these junior level athletes that we were kind of eyeing as maybe this is the next generation of potential Olympians, junior world teamers, hopeful medalists, getting them in that type of atmosphere to wrestle side by side with the guys that have been on Olympic teams and been part of this Beat the Streets gala. What's your opinion there on including the juniors in a matchup with Iran and what was, you know, it's always been a great event from a spectator standpoint and a cool factor. But in terms of actually the mindset that goes in, I mean, do you think this was a good move having the juniors involved in this?
I think it's always a good move when you do things that are, you know, a little bit different and that also promote the grassroots of the sport and also promote the future of the sport. I also was hoping to have a full lineup with Iran, with our Olympic team, though, also. So it's kind of both, do both is what the way I would say that. Time's a problem, maybe money's a problem, this and that, but that's where I would be at. The only thing I could do or say better would let's put a full dual meet lineup out there and give each of our Olympic guys a chance to compete and another opportunity on domestic soil to weigh where we're at, to evaluate where we're at individually.
And Dennis, we only had one Greco bout, but we did have Robbie Smith as an MC of sorts. So we had Greco on display, at least in one particular match with Busick losing to the South Korean. And then, you know, Robbie's gregarious attitude and big red, white, and blue shirt. Granted, didn't get to compete, but he did show the wrestling community a bit of his personality. I'm guessing you would like to see more Greco in this event.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, you wonder why we struggle with Greco in the United States. That's part of the problem. People will think I'm, you know, always a pessimist. Well, you know what? I'm tired of Greco getting beat up. And, you know, we don't have the opportunities that freestyle has. You know, we could have done some Greco junior duels there too, you know, to give kids an experience where they see how far they are behind and they have to make that commitment earlier, you know, instead of waiting until you're 23, 24 years old after you get out of college to start wrestling Greco. And, you know, I'm glad that they did give Busick a match, but, you know, it would be nice to see more in our own country. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it there.
All right, we'll switch it back over to Terry to talk about that type of dynamic. Dennis, you know, there's the what became the Kiki Cup. It's now kind of a celebratory event that was in a ballroom in Colorado Springs last time they held it, and then we've got the Beat the Streets out in New York. And Terry, with these type of events, they're one-offs. They're not used for rankings. There's positive exposure here. There's media exposure. It's an Olympic year. I mean, Adeline Gray on the women's side is getting a ton of media exposure. Helen Maroulis and her have great shots at becoming the first women's gold medalist in this country's history at the Olympic Games. But from a coaching standpoint, does an event like that kind of disrupt the training schedule, or is it something you're like, all right, this is something that we've had on our calendar for a number of years. We're going to build it into our peaking and training. And what do you really get out of an event like this?
Yeah, I think that's what I was talking about earlier is in the past, it's always been an event that happened after the world, after the U.S. Open, before the world team trials, or in the Olympic year after the Olympic trials. So you build it into your schedule. You know far enough out that you're building it into your schedule. So like Metcalf, when he made those world teams, and then you had the Beat the Streets event in between the worlds the world team trials and the U.S. Open, you had that event in between there. It was easy to build that in because you know far enough out and it works. You make it work. You figure it out and how that works. You talk with USA Wrestling so that when Novogratz scheduled that thing, he has it far enough out from the world trials where it makes sense. So this year with it being in May and the trials, the team's already decided in April, absolutely. A domestic event, you can make that work in May. You can figure that out where you're, you know, you don't have to be in best tip-top shape. You know, it's about competition, about, you know, keeping that hunger alive and about, you know, measuring where you're at that little bit at a time. And that would be a really, really good event to see that against a strong wrestling presence with Iran.
Now, jumping out of the Olympic cycles and talking a little bit about the summers that go along with wrestling coaches, Dennis, you've had a camp system for a long time. Terry, the Iowa wrestling camps have been kind of synonymous with the summertime in the state of Iowa. Start with Dennis on the type of camps that you run in the summertime, the age groups that you're identifying, and the overall benefits of summer camps when we're also still trying to push the freestyle and Greco-Roman on these athletes too. I mean, is there a balance between picking camps and picking the freestyle and Greco for the high school and the younger athletes to get them to like the sport? I mean, where's the balance from where you stand with these camp systems?
Yeah, the camps are great for the average kid that wants to go out and get better and learn new things. Most of my camps are like third grade through 12th grade. Sometimes second graders that get to come, but at that point we're just mainly trying to get them aware of their body, teach them things that they might not know. But as far as freestyle and Greco, Wisconsin does a pretty good job hosting like 3-day little, I call them mini camps, to get kids ready for Fargo. They have, I think, 5 of them that the athletes that they encourage athletes to come to. So they're training, getting their good competition in from other guys from the state, and then they head out to Fargo. So they get some decent rest, and it's just tough a lot of times for freestyle or Greco wrestlers to get good quality training in during the summer because a lot of the clubs shut down because the private clubs, guys are out doing camps and things like that. So it's good that Wisconsin does that. I don't know how many states out there that have kind of similar situations.
Now, Terry, being with the university and one of the more popular wrestling camps in the country and one that's traveled around the country, I remember when we were having our Virginia Fargo camp, training camp for getting ready for the Cadet and Junior Nationals. Iowa camp was held at Virginia Tech. This is before but Tom had the job there, and Mojo was the coach at Virginia Tech. But there's a demand for the Iowa camp, and what's the differences in a situation where, like, Dennis is running a camp kind of on his own, and then you bring in a university? What are the dynamics that university-run kind of camps or camps that bear a university name, like Iowa wrestling camps or something like that? What type of logistics go into running these things and balancing you training Dan Dennis with the Hawkeye Club and then running wrestling camps through the University of Iowa?
Well, the philosophy of our camps is to use it as a way to employ, keep our people busy with wrestling, obviously build a brand of our institution here too. So you're using it. The difference would be you're on campus. You have a college environment. You have a college room. You have a college dorm situation, a college food situation. So that would be the major difference. The technical and the tactical information that you're getting, whether you're with a person like Dennis who freelances his camps, or you're going to a university where they use their own staff, or whether, like, I was at Wabash College just the other day, and Sammy Hansen, myself, Brandon Slay, Bobby Douglas, Kale Sanderson, and Stephen Abbas, we're all on that docket. So, that camp, you had 6 or 7 different clinicians that weren't attached to that university, and it worked very well for them. So it's kind of what you want to see. I mean, if you want your kid to learn low ankle, leg attacks and that darting motion, and who do you think of right away? Think of John Smith in Oklahoma State, right? So it's kind of that dynamic to it. And then also, what you want to achieve, like Dennis said, as a freestyler, you're getting ready for Fargo. There are a lot of situations out there. You got to work and dig hard to find them, but there are enough situations out there to prepare yourself by going out of your hometown or out of your home state to find a place where you can train. But the general philosophy for any kind of a camp system when you're running it is to, broaden your brand and, create awareness to, what you can provide and what you can give to people as a service.
Now, with the Iowa camps, is that mostly geared for the folk style athlete looking to wrestle in college, or are there freestyle and Greco Roman techniques being brought in that summertime? Because there's probably some kids that are looking like, hey, I'm going to Fargo after this.
We have guys that come out and that come out and pay that are going to Fargo, that go to our intensive camp, and they leave a day or two early to get to their state camp. We have people that are smart. Like, if we have a training camp and, one of our current athletes is the quote unquote head coach of that particular group, he's aware of the kid that is in his group that is getting ready to wrestle Greco-Roman or Fargo, and he's trained accordingly. It's just something that, coaches do in America. It's what we do in Iowa. We're getting ready to win an NCAA title. Well, Dan Dennis and Brent Metcalf and Tony Ramos were still, gearing up to win Olympic gold medals and make the Olympic team at that time. So, that's going on at the same time that we're getting ready to win, NCAA championships also. So, it's not something that's unique or foreign or, confusing here. It's just something that we do. We operate, within the same walls, but, there's also people are on different schedules all the time. I mean, our red shirt group is on a little bit of a different schedule after the NCAA tournament's over, because now they're turning their attention to those age group freestyle events. Thomas Gilman wasn't getting ready for the 20 and unders at the end of April, after the NCAA tournament, whereas we had, 15 guys that went to that thing. So, it's not something that's different or foreign inside of a college wrestling room.
Well, we've broached a number of topics: summer camps, the training situation for the Olympics, episode 30 as we wrap up here. And I just want to thank everybody out there that listened to this show to get the unique perspectives from world champions Dennis Hall and Terry Brands. This is Jason Bryan for episode 30 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Check out all the resources that we offer at worldwrestlingresource.com.
Well, we appreciate you, Jason, and it's not just our perspective. It's your perspective, and it's not just about world and Olympic champions bringing ideas. It's also about guys that watch world and Olympic champions compete, and we are really fortunate to have you on board with that, and I really, really appreciate it. So thanks.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.